time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, who is Ron from D.C. Welcome. Yeah, sorry, it's a trap.
Yeah, it's kind of dangerous back here, man. Hey, y'all do that.
How you doing?
Thank you.
I kind of like that applause thing, baby. I should sing a song. my name's Ron, and I'm an addict. My clean date's March 23rd, 1989. My home group is the Yellow Brick Road Group of Narcotics Anonymous. Got some homies up in here, too, right?
Yeah,
we meet every Friday, 8 o'clock at 50 Irving Street, man, and we have a damn good time doing it, boy, I tell you. I kind of got drafted for this group that I don't think I would have committed to do a midnight meeting. Because to be perfectly honest with you, I've been clean 23 years. I've been married 25. I've been a good husband for about 13, right? In the last 13 years, I can only think of maybe twice that I was away from my wife at midnight, except when I'm at a convention. Now, last year, I was up at midnight because there was a guy, the guy actually who stood up for the most clean time downstairs. He was my sponsor. He, last year, spoke at the marathon at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I kind of thought it was strange. Here, this man got 34 years and they telling him to speak at a marathon. He's better, he should. He told me, he said, man, if you're too big to speak at the little ones, you're too small to speak at the big ones. And I held on to that. I held on to that. It makes a lot of sense, right? Because it ain't about a show. Narcotics Anonymous really saved my life. I come from a real upscale neighborhood in Southeast Washington, D.C. called Berry Farms. Upscale projects. And in my neighborhood, it was normal. It was really normal. What was abnormal in my neighborhood was somebody who worked 8 hours a day. There wasn't very many people around here who had those things on jobs. Not a lot of jobs around there, right? Right next door, there was a lady called Bubbles who was a bootlegger. She didn't sell the big stuff. She only sold like beer and what they call the half pints. Across the alley was a lady, Miss B, who sold everything as far as the liquor. If I walked out my front door and walked across the court, there was marijuana straight ahead and heroin 2 doors over to the right of that. Where did that dude live? I could go out the back door, cut down the alley, and make a left and get a haircut, a dinner, and just about any kind of strange pill that you could ask for, right? So using was pretty normal in the neighborhood. Now, my father drank, my mother didn't. She never drank, I don't think. Well, yes, she did, because my mother makes dandelion wine, and they still try to get me to taste it on holidays. I don't do it, because they don't have to understand that I can't drink. I got to understand. Dad drank. I never saw him drunk. He smoked cigarettes. And to emulate him, I smoked cigarettes, and I tried drinking. Drinking never did do me. It burned going down. It made my stomach feel bad. But one day, I had a friend named Pee-wee who came to me with a little capsule. And he said that was what the older dudes used to make them cool. Now, mind you, in my neighborhood, it was important to be cool. We was broke. You know, we had no property. We didn't have nice clothes. Nobody had a decent car or anything. But you could at least act cool. You know, you cut your jeans at the bottom because you couldn't afford to get them cuffed, but you cut them at an angle. So they'd be cool, yeah. You know, when you go down to the thrift store, you get a shirt that's got all the buttons so you could unbutton them down to the third or fourth button and make sure the whole collar was on there, no holes, because you could put your collar up. But the main thing was the way you walked. There was a walk that they called the pimp, right? Yeah, there wasn't nothing, get me wrong, wasn't no prostitutes nowhere near there. Wasn't no pimps nowhere near there. It was a walk, and the walk was a cool walk, because when you walked, you kind of go up and down. Your head goes like this. One hand gets bent, like, and the other hand does something like. I don't ask me to do it. I was a fool when I was a kid, and I did it, but no more pimp walking and stuff. But Pee-wee said that little pill was what they used to make them cool. So I was, man, I want to be cool. So can I have a pill? And he's like, no, I can give you half. I didn't know you could take a pill in half, but he pulled it apart, and I was fascinated because now he had two. So I gave it to him, and I began to swallow it, and he grabbed my hand and said, no, you don't swallow it. Well, how in the hell am I going to get cold? He said, well, you have to take it up your nose. So I stuck it up my nose. I didn't know you're supposed to take the powder out. It was the first time. But, you know, after he explained to me and I finished gagging, this warm feeling kind of hit me. And I remember feeling nauseous, and I bent over and I threw up. I mean, like I had swallowed poison, which I really had. I didn't know it at the time. But when I finished and I came back up again, I felt like I was the king of the world. You couldn't tell me I hadn't arrived. I ain't even got to practice the pimp no more. I am the pimp. That was it. And I made up my mind right then that I'm going to keep this stuff in me for the rest of my life. This is the greatest thing God ever created. You couldn't tell me nothing better at dope. I hadn't smoked marijuana yet. I had only drank a couple of beers, but that was my first real high, right? After that, I went on and tried everything. I mean, if the first one was that good, imagine what the rest of the stuff was going to be like. I started using at the age of 12. When I stopped, I was 34 because the wife that I had gotten had decided, well, she actually told me that I had to get some help. Her words were, you either go and get help or just go. Right. Now, I'm going to tell you, my wife paid all the bills, and she was good at it. So we had a nice house, and we had a couple of cars to live in that I could drive. And I really didn't want to let that go because I was better than the bum who slept behind the liquor store and the dude who slept in the car, the way I saw it. So when she told me that I had to get help, of course, I called places, and they said, well, you got to do 6 months or 9 months. And I wasn't going for that. And I was like, man, do you know how much dope I would miss if I stayed in a treatment facility for 9 months? Right. That's the mentality at the time then. So she found out by me being a veteran, I could go into the VA hospital, and it was a 28-day program. I can do 28 days. I could sneak enough stuff in there to probably last me the first week and then probably sneak out halfway through and get something to carry me through the rest, right? So she dropped me off at the VA hospital, packed the bags. The day before, I walked from Clinton, Maryland to D.C. with no money to get high. I was already a methadonian, but, you know, getting to that clinic wasn't important. What was important was that part of my job as an addict was to monitor paydays, and I knew a dude that had a good government job, right? And it was his payday, and if I didn't get to him first, somebody else would. So I went down to his job. Hey, dog. Went down to his job, and just the fact that when I walked in, I mean, he had this suit and tie on, he was a government worker, but when he saw me, without saying a word, you know, about what we were going to do, he told me right away, I'm going to get everything I wanted, because he looked up at me and he said, my man. And that told me I got him. He asked me why I was there. I said, well, I was in the neighborhood. I thought I'd stop by. He said, man, you right on time. It's payday. He's like, what? Payday? y'all done played it off. Come on. Right. So we took our check and went over to... We took our check and went over to the Navy Yard and cashed our check. And I was kind of like his sponsor, I guess. I was a senior addict. Or I don't know, what do you call an older dope fiend? Anyway, I was the one who had the most tracks, whatever. I outranked him on the strip. I don't know what the title is for that, but I did all the copping. And every time I copped, before I went back to where he was, I would take half out of every bag. We spent about $400 out of our good government check. And I was willing to spend it all, but he was confused. He started saying things like I was supposed to get clothes out of the cleaners and buy his daughter shoes and get groceries, stuff that didn't make any sense. That was crazy stuff. So I decided that since his mind was warped, I needed to go. And besides, I had all that dope left over in my mother's car that I had actually borrowed from my mother under the pretense I was coming right back earlier. I had that dope in the car, and I had to use that dope before I got my mother's car back. So I drove back to Clinton, went in the bathroom, and used all of that dope. At the end, when all that dope was gone, I had one thought on my mind. What can I do to get some more? I wasn't high. I wasn't dope sick anymore, but I wasn't high. I didn't know at the point it was over. The next day, my wife dropped me off at the VA hospital. At my 7th year anniversary, she told the whole group the plan was to drop him off at the VA and then we was going to all move so he couldn't find us when he came out. Kind of hurt my feelings, right? She couldn't sell a house in the 28 days, thank God, right? So she got stuck with me, right? But last week I remembered something. I opened up a book that was given to me when I was in that treatment facility. It was an AA book, but they gave it to us. And I opened the book up, and in there was a four-leaf clover. When I was in the treatment facility, they would let us go out to smoke. It was a circle we used to walk around every day. And I remember walking around this circle, and I looked down, and you know, clovers grow, and thousands of them, right? And I looked down, and I looked directly at a four-leaf clover. You know, I always heard about it, but I didn't know it. And I plucked it, and I held on to it. And, you know, I've never been really superstitious, but last week when I opened the book and looked at that clover, I said, that might have been God giving me a sign that he got my back. I mean, he made the clovers, right? You know? But it's just something that's popped in my head recently. Anyway, after going into the VA, and that 28 days and stuff, that's kind of where it began for me. There was a guy that was from Burry Farms who had gotten clean, had some, he's deceased. They showed his picture tonight down at Bush J. And he came up and he spoke. And when he spoke on the ward that day, he talked about things that I remember in his story, but I didn't recognize him because I had never seen him clean shaven, short hair, neat clothes. He was the guy who had scruffy beard, nappy hair. He used to wear a belt around his waist. I mean, a rope around his waist to hold his sweatpants up. Right. I mean, he was a bum. He was a wino, right? But to see him up there speaking clearly, because there was another language that we spoke when I was in the streets. We didn't talk like this. This English that we use, it seemed like most of us understand this thing too, right? There was another language, and we would say things like, "Sean, I'm in the city. Who got that thing? You put me down, one." Right? Some of y'all know something I said too, didn't y'all? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know if they still talk like that. You know, but he was speaking this English, and when I found out who he was, I was really impressed at how could this bum get his. I didn't see myself as a bum at the time, so I looked down on him. Seeing him spark something in me to tell me if he could, maybe I could stop using. Right? When I got out of that treatment center, I did what they told me. I started going to meetings, right? I went to the first meeting, and I did. They told me to go and ask for help. I was one of those people, first time in the meeting, sit dead center of the room. They had what's called a secretary's report, and I stood up. I don't know why. Nobody else stood up, but I stood up. I said, my name Ron. I'm an addict. I got street in me, so I'm telling you, I ain't got no mustache, because I thought I looked gay without a mustache at the time. I said, I ain't got no mustache, and I ain't got one of them books y'all talking about, but I need help. And I'm gritting now. You need to know how tough I am, right? And they started clapping and applauding and cheering and talking about keep coming back. Keep. And I sat back there and I thought to myself, damn, boy, you a hell of a speaker. They clapping. It was sick, man. But that's how I got here. That's also how I stay here. I go to meetings. You hear me say I got a home group. Fridays at Ocean City. My group meets on Friday at VA. We meet up here on Fridays. We all pretty much sit together every year downstairs as a home group, you know, at the main speakers meeting. And I love my home group, man. They can pretty much tell you anything about me. I got no secrets. There's a guy here called my road dog. I met him at that treatment facility. He was Bigfoot at the time because his foot was swollen up. But I found Bigfoot. I will tell him anything. As God is my witness, there is nothing that I will do that I will not tell him. There's somebody in my life who can tell you everything about me. He's sitting right over there. And I'm proud to know that I have a friend like that, because nothing that I've told him have I heard from anybody else since. They call that integrity. He practiced it, I practice it. It really works. It's good to find people you can depend on. And there's a lot of us in Narcotics Anonymous, right? As far as this unity versus prejudice, I understand prejudice to be prejudging. In other words, kind of figuring out what somebody or something is before you get to know them. That can be real devastating to recovery. You know, the unity says that we need to stick together. It says that our common welfare comes first. I'm right? Our common welfare, that what's best for all of us is more important than what's best for any one of us. Therefore, what's better for the group is more important than what's better for me. Right? And in the group, it could be, well, right now, look around you. Anybody's a member of Narcotics Anonymous. It ain't got nothing to do with race or your historic background or what you look like, how big or small you are. None of that matters, right? In Narcotics Anonymous, I've gotten information from people who I probably wouldn't even associate with on the street. Some I would have probably robbed, something. They may have robbed me. To be honest, they, you know, in the streets, I had to be prejudiced. My home strip was called Talbot Street. Never had no good dope. Never. You know, so you had to be petty just to stand out there. Talbot Street is like you start out there getting cheap dope, and then you move uptown and get good dope, and then when you get enough trouble and people can't, you come back to Talbot Street to retire. Right? Yeah, that kind of strip. But you couldn't practice any type of character around there because you'd become a victim too quick. And you had to judge, because when somebody walked up, you had to decide whether they're a victim or they're okay, or maybe they're law enforcement. You got to judge right off the bat, right? Narcotics Anonymous, man, I've kind of learned to look past how people look. And thank God I have, man, because, I mean, some of you people have done things for me, man, that I didn't think was possible. I was telling a young lady a little while ago that, you know, I'm not used to being up at midnight. This time, you know what, every night, because of Narcotics Anonymous, every night when I get into bed, I rub my wife's back. I've been doing it for about 12 or 13 years, every single night. I like it. That's what you all have done for my marriage, right? She likes it. I don't go outside the marriage. Because of you all. I don't think I don't want to, man. Some of y'all look good, good, good. I'm like, man. I'll be wearing pants. And I'm talking about the ladies. Just in case, you know, I ain't got nothing against gay people. Because, I mean, they showed a lady up there, Tina T. Tina T was transvestite, but Tina gave me some information on a relationship that I had gotten in that made a major difference in my life because when I was cheating on my wife, I got involved with a lady in Narcotics Anonymous, and she was involved with a lot of my friends, if you know what I mean by involved. Because I think we counted, what, 9 guys, dogs she had been with, and I knew all of them. Man, that was hard to swallow. And when I ended the relationship, I remember telling Tina, man, yeah, well, Tina, it's over. And Tina said, just because you stopped screwing that girl don't mean it's over. I'm like, what do you mean by that? She said, the feelings are still there. See, it's going to take a while, man, you know, and if you really want to get over it, you're going to have to stay away from them. That's some real valuable information on relationships, right? I did what Tina said, and I eventually got over the young lady. I don't know if she ever got over doing all my friends or whatever, man, but I was a hard pill to swallow, man, but you all get me through. Narcotics Anonymous gets me through because there's been a lot of storms, man. My mother-in-law became terminally ill about 9 years ago. She was living alone in a nice house uptown. And I talked to a couple of people in Narcotics Anonymous, and they said, well, you got a pretty decent house, man. Instead of trying to hire somebody to take care of her, why don't you do it? And I'm, man, how am I going to stay at her house and take care of her? Bring her to your house. So I went home and I talked to my wife, and we finally decided we moved out of the master bedroom and put Mama in there. And we were able to take care of Mama until she passed. I actually developed a good relationship with my mother-in-law. You know, on TV, they always talk about bad Mama. Me and my mother-in-law were great. I used to walk in the room and stuff with a glass of water and walk creeping towards her bed, and she would wake up, what you doing? Pour this water on you, make you think you peed on yourself. That's who I am. She would pick up a tissue box or anything and throw it at me and just bust out laughing. Yeah, that's the relationship we had, and it got to the point that when she had to go to the bathroom at one point, she wouldn't let nobody pick her up and take her but me, because she trusted me because my character had been embellished. Y'all heard that word? I got that in NA too, yeah. So I told you I used to speak that other language. So sometimes now when I say I got a word that's got more than 5 or 6 letters, I stop them because I'm impressed. Man, y'all something else, man. You know, but the prejudice can be a real hindrance, because there have been times when early recovery, I walk in a room and there's some guy out there who I think I may not like. And I don't know what he's going to say yet, but I say, man, I'm going somewhere else. I really don't want to hear that mess. You know what I'm saying? He keeps saying the same stuff over and all that. That's me judging him. I don't know what he's going to say. He might want to say at that time, you know what, man, I've been rude to Ron. I need to apologize. Or something. How do I know what God's going to put in him? Because if you get something good out of me, you got to give God the credit. I know who I am. I'm that bum that likes to shoot dope in my neck and stuff, right? And crawl on the floor and steal our mama's pocketbook and all that. So when you get good out of me, God gets all that credit and stuff like that. Because he did what he does for me is why I do what I do today. But I love this new way of life, because without the prejudice, like I say, the door is open, man. Look how many people are in this room that can help me. Most of you are willing. Maybe some of you might not be there, but most of you are willing. I know most people in Narcotics Anonymous that I have met are willing to either talk to me or listen to me. Some will feed you. They will give you rides. I know that because that's what I do. I give people rides. I feed them. I paid a few people's bills sometime. But don't come to me after the meeting. There's this one thing that I was taught to do in Narcotics Anonymous with money, that if somebody wants to borrow money, don't loan them any money. If you can afford to, give it to them and then tell them to give it to somebody else that you know. And I practiced doing that. And it worked great until one young lady I did it with started sharing it in the meeting. When I got here, Ron gave me $5 and told me I ain't had to pay him back. Just passing out to the next. Man, people been coming ever since. That's not how it works. So, I mean, I developed this relationship with my higher power. And at one time, I was what you call religious. I was a Baptist. I still attend Baptist church sometimes, but I'm not really religious anymore because of this principle in the second step called open-mindedness. I found out that the God of your understanding can benefit me just like the God of my understanding can if I'm open enough to receive it. So when the guy with the different religious or whatever background you call wants to share something with me, I stay open to receive it because I don't know where the help gonna come from. And all the help been good. All the help has been, I can't think of anybody in Narcotics Anonymous who shared something with me that was, well, there was one dude that told me when I was getting out of treatment, man, you shouldn't go back to your wife. You need to go to a treatment center. They said don't get in no relationship. They didn't say in the one you was in, right? I'm going to leave home, man, so some dude with a big old Harry John is going to tackle my wife. That ain't happening. No. Though for a year, me and my wife separated. When I had, I think, 2 years clean, and she found out about the girlfriend, we separated for a year. I immediately went to the meeting and lied and said, well, I did. I went to the first meeting. I said, listen, I'll let y'all know right now. Me and my wife decided to separate. 2 days later, I was back saying, well, the truth was she put me out because she paid all the bills. She was the authority in the household. But in that year that we were separated, I had to get my own place. And I learned how to pay bills. I developed a checking account and a savings account. I learned how to write checks. And then I was able to institute this system where I scanned my bills and the bank pays them. So when I got back with my wife and I introduced it to her, she liked it. So I became Big Daddy. Yes, sir. That's what happened when God steps in. She put me out. God stepped in, took control, gave me you all. You all directed me to be the man that she needed. Right. And you're still doing that today. I told you, I've only been a really decent husband for like maybe 12 or 13 years. But I love the fact now that when we have an argument, it only lasts about 5 or 10 minutes. Because she'll say something like, you know what, I'm leaving you and stuff. And I'm like, okay, where are we going? Right. Yeah, because if you leave me, I'm going to follow you. I mean, I'm too old to go get something else. And I mean, it really ain't like I'm that great in bed anymore. Or that I ever really was. I mean, you know, but who else gonna put up with my junk? You know what I'm saying? She lets me hang out with my road dog and don't get mad. So, I mean, I'm gonna stay with my wife, man. She's a winner, right? And she tells me sometimes, you need a meeting. I love that about my wife, that she understands how valuable you are, really are to me. I want to tell you, man, I love being a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't like being up at midnight because I'm usually asleep at this time, but I will do whatever I can do to help you because I need you all to help me. Time has not been a cure for my, I still think about using. 23 years clean, I think about it often. I ain't talking about once every 6 months, sometimes every day. I think, it's not all, now don't get me wrong, I didn't say I want to use. Having the desire to use and thinking about it is two different things. I think about it, but you all taught me how to think about it, all right? And I don't know who told me that, but they say play your tape back. Matter of fact, start at the end, right? And when I think about the end, I think I want to go back there. I really don't think, I don't remember a lot of the crazy stuff because it's been so long, but because I go to meetings regularly, you keep reminding me of things, and especially the crack people. I never smoked crack. And I love to hear the crack people talk about their experiences. They say, I was at my mother's house and I copped from this dude across the street and I got in the car and I drove across the state line and I went over Willie's house and we went upstairs in the back and I started smoking and then when I came down, I went over to cross the street and I started looking on the floor for something I dropped. Why are you looking for something on the floor you dropped across the, man, y'all fast, I don't get, and the picking thing. Yeah, I've seen that, the picking thing. What is that? Y'all keep sharing with me. I would never do that as long as y'all keep sharing, man. But look, my time is up, man. I want to thank y'all for coming sharing with me, man, and I love you, man. Keep coming back all y'all.